1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We welcome you to another edition of Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And our guest today on Feldis and Kale is Matt DiLoretto. And Mr. DiLoretto is the Vice President, State Government Affairs of the Healthcare Distribution Alliance. HDA represents primary pharmaceutical distributors, the vital link between the nation's pharmaceutical manufacturers and pharmacies, hospitals, long-term care facilities, clinics, and others nationwide. And Matt DiLoretto, we welcome you to Feldis and Kale. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, Matt, you do, and your entity does so much work. Maybe it would be helpful to walk our listeners through how that plays out in the supply chain, specifically with respect to COVID-19 vaccines. Just walk us through everything that goes into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And HDAs, we are the National Trade Association that represents healthcare, pharmaceutical, wholesale distributors. So we have about 36 members. And specifically for COVID, I like to point out that the vaccine distribution aspect of this response effort is very different from the typical healthcare supply chain. Typically, you know, before the pandemic and during the pandemic, for your everyday healthcare needs, about 93% of all pharmaceuticals are arriving at their ultimate dispensing or administration location from an HDA member. And that is very much what I would consider a typical commercial supply chain: providers, dispensing locations, order product from their contracted wholesaler, and then their contracted wholesaler is responsible for getting those products to them 24/7, 365 days a year. In COVID, for the vaccine response effort, this is being entirely controlled and driven by either the federal government or federal government in coordination with state governments. The government has purchased these vaccine products and targeted wholesale distributors such as McKesson, who is the centralized distributor for the national distribution effort of COVID vaccines, are responsible for getting those products to the vaccine administration or dispensing sites nationwide. And that is how vaccines are being handled. But it's very important to remember that, you know, COVID therapeutics, products used to treat COVID, are being handled by other HDA members, as well as individual states have contracted with individual wholesalers to what's called the last mile, get those products to the dispensing locations throughout the state. But the major difference is, during the typical healthcare supply chain, it's very much a commercially driven effort, you know, providers ordering products from a contracted wholesaler. The COVID vaccine distribution process is being handled entirely by the government, giving the direction as to where those products go.
Got it. And so with respect to the COVID-19, I think people listening interested in everything that you do. However, in terms of just COVID-19, can you again walk through sort of how this has all played out uniquely? An amazing effort by your group, by all the entities associated with your group, by the government, etc. How did this all play out? I mean, we exceeded the goal of 100 million shots in the arms by 100 days. In fact, it was over 200 million, but you played a central role in doing that. And can you talk about how that played out?
Yeah, I think I looked at the numbers yesterday. I think it's about 312.5 million doses have been distributed.
Wow.
Nationwide. And what we've seen since the early days of vaccine rollout is the logistics providers, the McKessons of the world and some of the other wholesalers involved in this effort, have kept steady pace with the volume of vaccines that have been produced. Those entities, those companies, have been working on what's on average about a 24-hour turnaround meaning when a manufacturer has made a product available, when it's done being manufactured, to the designated wholesaler to distribute it, like McKesson. They are not holding that product. They are not, you know, storing that product for extended periods of time. It's about a 24-hour turnaround. And to answer your question about, you know, what does this look like, it's really an unprecedented effort. From the early days, long before the first vaccines were approved, you know, wholesalers have been investing heavily in, for example, the technology and the infrastructure required to properly store and distribute these products. From the early days when it was first Pfizer with the ultra cold technology required to store and ship those in coordination with Pfizer, who handled a lot of the shipments themselves. But everything from the ultra cold technology to literally acquiring and building new distribution centers strictly charged with the distribution of vaccines. Many of these vaccines aren't going through the, you know, the pre-existing distribution centers. There's been whole warehouses built specifically to handle the vaccine, and therefore you need the individuals employed to, you know, handle the repackaging and the shipment of those vaccines. So companies have hired thousands of additional employees specifically charged with the distribution of the vaccine product. So it's really an unprecedented effort that's involved everything from technological advancements to literally, you know, acquiring and building buildings specifically charged with shipping these products. Because what's very important to remember is you have the COVID vaccine being distributed, but all these companies have to ensure that the pre-existing and the existing healthcare supply chain for everybody else's healthcare needs are still being well supplied as well.
To me, the whole rollout was amazing. I mean, at the start of the pandemic last March, when we first really knew about it, when it hit our shores hard, you know, many of the experts were saying, oh, there's no way we could have a vaccine, you know, 3 years maybe, but it may take even longer than that. So what sped it all up? Was it Operation Warp Speed, or how exactly did it all play out that we got the shot into our arms less than a year later, much less than a year later?
Well, it was certainly a worldwide effort. I give all the credit in the world to the scientists and manufacturers and government officials that were behind that effort to actually, you know, create this vaccine in such a short amount of time. As the, you know, we'll give credit where credit is due for sure. We are the logistics side of the industry. We're the ones who ship the product where it needs to go. So we're not involved in the actual research and development of that product, but it was certainly a worldwide effort, during a time when, you know, the healthcare system was what we like to say is it bent, but it did not break. And what we mean by that is we were seeing on the logistics side of the supply chain, you know, 300, 700 and higher percentage increases in the ordering of certain pharmaceutical products. I'm sure many of your listeners, you know, the PPE aspect of it, where there are shortages of gloves and masks and what have you. So there was a lot going on simultaneously at the same time as the government and these, you know, scientific entities like the manufacturing industry were, you know, churning to get a vaccine created and approved. So it was a challenging time, but we're, you know, the supply chain and the healthcare system did, you know, bend a little bit. You know, we had our issues, no secret about that, but certainly withstood the increases of demand.
Well, it bent, but it was efficient and generally efficient too. And why is it more efficient for wholesale distributors to ship medications and supplies rather than manufacturers?
Yeah, great question. Well, I like to give a little anecdote when I'm asked that question. And on average, an HDA member, a wholesaler, is purchasing product from about 1,400 manufacturers worldwide. If you can imagine a corner drugstore or even small chain drugstore or, you know, your local doctor's office needing to go through their inventory each and every day or maybe even just once a week and check what they need and then order those products from that many sources worldwide or even half as many of those sources worldwide, it's a, you know, daunting if not impossible task for your normal healthcare provider to sit there and order all those products. So what wholesale distributors provide is efficiency to both the manufacturer, who doesn't have to invest in the time or infrastructure to get those products worldwide to each and every provider location that's ordering them, but it also allows the provider to focus on patient care instead of sitting there each and every day, all day, and ordering a product. So what we like to say is, on average, if a pharmacy on, you know, your average main street in America orders a product by this afternoon from their contracted wholesale distributor, the wholesale distributor will more often than not have that to them by tomorrow morning when they open their doors. So it's simply a great amount of efficiency added to the supply chain through working with your wholesale distributor instead of both 1,400 manufacturers and tens of thousands of provider locations nationwide needing to invest in the time and logistics expertise to handle that aspect of the healthcare supply chain on their own.
Matt DiLoretto is our guest, Vice President, State Government Affairs of the Healthcare Distribution Alliance, HDA. We'll take a break here on Feldis and Kale at 103.9, 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, brought to you by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Welcome back to Feldis and Kale. A delight to have you along with us, and great to be joined today by Matt DiLoretto, Vice President, State Government Affairs of the Healthcare Distribution Alliance. And Matt, I mean, this is like, no pun intended, or maybe there is, but this is like distribution on steroids. I mean, it really is, right? Right? I mean, so how have you applied your past experiences and the lessons that you learned in the past to enhance this response to COVID-19?
Yeah, great question. And, you know, I don't think there's any comparison to COVID, you know, at least in my experience, certainly in my experience. But from what I've heard as well, you know, again, this has been an unprecedented, you know, time and challenge. But national emergencies are not new to this industry. You know, obviously, this is a much different one, a pandemic. But there have been national emergencies in the past that the supply chain has had to adapt to, be them natural disasters of weather or what have you. But I won't mince words here and say that this has definitely, the past year, been an unprecedented time across the board. You know, you alluded earlier to just the creation of new products, but as well as the volume of response during the height of this pandemic, I don't think we've ever experienced before. So it's been a learning experience. We have also, frankly, faced some of those same challenges of those natural disasters. If you recall, you know, in Texas, the snow in Texas a little while ago caused a hiccup in the in the delivery of these products, and in the Midwest as well. But, you know, we overcame and adapted, and I think it was just a couple days that kind of slowed up the delivery of vaccine in those areas. And then we adjusted and got those products to where they needed to go and then some. So, you know, you adapt and overcome, and seems like we're at a point now where, you know, things are moving, knock on wood, quite more smoothly than they were a month or two ago.
And bringing it home to, you mentioned Texas, bringing it home to New Hampshire, how do the distributors partner with states like New Hampshire to ensure states' residents receive the vaccine? How has that partnership worked, and how do you see it moving forward?
Yeah, great question. We have been in contact with both the federal and state government entities since the very first days of this pandemic. We have worked with state governments as well as the federal government to, you know, the list is long. For example, though, you know, in the early days, it was ensuring that healthcare distributors and their employees were identified as essential personnel that could keep working when the rest of the world was mandated to shut down, to put simply. You know, oftentimes this industry goes overlooked. And that's not a jab at anyone. It's just a fact of the matter that most, you know, Americans don't know that this industry is operating behind the scenes. So we work with state entities to identify that our employees were deemed essential. Plus, we had to work with multiple state entities when there were state borders shut down for delivery of product or transportation. Because all the, our trucks, you know, sometimes the trucks are contracted out to other entities and what have you. So we had to work through that. And then during the, you know, the COVID vaccine rollout specifically, we worked with individual state entities that were mandated by the CDC to stand up their own distribution plans. So we certainly were involved in that process, and actually HDA staff, as the National Association, actually sits on a few of the state work groups charged with vaccine distribution planning efforts. So the list is long at the state level, is just as long at the federal level, because this was certainly a joint federal and state coordinated effort. But, you know, we've been in touch with state governments each and every step of the process. We also work with our partner organizations, like the National Pharmacists Association, pharmacy associations, that have been critical to all this. So it's just it's an everyday effort, and we will continue working with the states and the federal government, you know, during COVID and after, frankly.
Well, a lot of adaptation, too. I mean, I assume each state had, you know, different ideas and plans about how to distribute the vaccine. And so I think your group and your alliance and all the work that people have been doing logistically to efficiently adapt to things that are thrown your way, resulting in the COVID-19 context, as you mentioned, Matt, what did you say, over 300 million shots in arms at this point?
312 doses administered, I mean, doses distributed. I don't have that number in front of me administered, but it's over 200 million.
Okay.
I know that.
Yep. And how do you see it moving forward? Do you see it continuing to be as successful as it has been? And what are some of the challenges on the horizon?
Yeah, knock on wood. It seems like things are operating fairly efficiently at this time. In fact, you know, I'm sure you all have heard as well about, you know, it seems like there might be some surpluses in some locations across the country at certain pharmacies and what have you, simply because it seems like some populations are not scheduling to get the vaccine or what have you. So I think we might have kind of peaked that crest of the supply and demand issue. So much of this situation was simply, you know, everybody was asking questions earlier about, you know, we need more, why can't we get more? It's simply supply and demand. You know, manufacturers can only manufacture so much when you have, and you have more people wanting it than were manufactured. And now it seems to, you know, be kind of turning that corner. But, you know, we will see what happens. I think the ideal situation for anyone involved in this effort is eventually, as I've alluded to in the beginning of our conversation, that this just becomes a vaccine like your American would get when they get the flu vaccine.
Right.
That it kind of transitions out of this kind of government-controlled, government-run effort. And that's not a jab at the government. It's just, I think the best outcome here is that this, you know, you walk into your pharmacy once, whenever the schedule is that the CDC says, and say, hey, you know, I need a COVID vaccine, and it's available through the commercial marketplace. But that date and that goal is still on the horizon. Those conversations still need to happen. So right now, the distributors are just going to keep shipping the product where the government says it needs to go, and we'll go from there.
So you do see it as an ongoing thing, like the flu shot, because it will probably never leave us now. It will always be there. So you do see it as an ongoing vaccine that we should, you know, down the road have like once a year, like the flu shot.
Yeah, that's a question. Frankly, it's a question I have myself. you know, how often this will, you know, is it a booster? Is it, you know, another vaccine round? You know, I don't know those answers. You know, those are left to people, frankly, much smarter than me. But, you know, I just believe that, you know, the ideal outcome here is this kind of emergency response, pandemic response. Kind of dies down, and this process is absorbed into just what we call the typical healthcare supply chain, you know, that just kind of is always churning there in the background, keeping the healthcare supply chain well supplied. The government somewhat takes a back seat to it, and, you know, life gets, quote, back to normal, as we've been using that phrase for a long time now.
Yeah, hopefully sooner rather than later. Matt, yeah. one of the things you mentioned was the unused vaccines, and as we're seeing with you know, all the folks who have been vaccinated, there is a group of folks, there's some people called vaccine hesitancy, whatever the case may be, there is more and more you're hearing about unused vaccines, including at the racetrack this past weekend. I think roughly two-thirds of the Johnson & Johnson went unused. So what is, from a supply chain perspective, how do you handle the unused vaccines? Are those just in the custody of whomever has them at the time, i.e. the state of New Hampshire or a local pharmacy, and they determine, or do they work with you to ship them to other places that may need them? How does that all work?
Yeah, that I believe that is up to the individual state distribution planning efforts.
Okay.
On how those are handled. You know, I've talked to a few pharmacists myself recently, just through some other work that I was doing for HDA, you know, that they were independent pharmacies, you know, down south and elsewhere that, you know, were having surpluses of them. You know, that's a great question, and I don't have an answer to that, frankly, exactly how it's definitely getting to be more of an issue from what I'm hearing. Earlier on, it seemed to be kind of, you know, there were definitely enough populations to be, or individuals wanting it to eventually get it and use those products. But that is an answer I don't have right now. I apologize.
Well, and no worries there, Matt. But you know, how has the COVID vaccine distribution impacted the rest of what you do? I'm sure you were, you know, busy enough already. Had a great operation running, but COVID comes along. What impact did it have on the other aspects of your distribution process?
Well, on my personal job, it had a lot of impact. Being in government affairs, obviously, this was the issue. You know, for some time there, especially when you're dealing with even everything from state legislatures being shut down.
Yep.
You know, but it has had an impact on I think that's the biggest impact it's had, just on the national discussion that's going on in the background, how states, how the federal government, et cetera, can be better prepared. I don't know if there was anything that could have prepared us for this type of, you know, increase in demand and response to this type of pandemic. But I do see things at this time, you know, getting back to normal. I'm happy to report this isn't the only issue you know, I and my team have been working on lately from a government affairs perspective. Like I said, there were on the supply chain itself, the increases of ordering patterns that were happening 6 months ago, 8 months ago, you know, it was well aware that it would take months to absorb those back to a normal, you know, stage of ordering. But there are discussions going on nationwide now about, you know, stockpiling of product at the state and federal level and at the health system level. You know, be that PPE or certain types of pharmaceutical products. And the only thing I would say about that is there's a degree of education that should occur, that needs to occur, and I encourage anyone looking into those types of issues to contact HDA or others in the industry to have those discussions. You know, at some times, which is totally normal, you know, for policymakers, state officials to be reactionary and just say, you know, we must do this to prepare for the next time, but not totally understand how the supply chain works. You know, that's really what we're working on now, to make sure that any policies that get put in place are appropriate and that actually don't strain the supply chain more than it already has been strained.
Well, Matt, you've given us some great insight into the distribution of the vaccine, and we appreciate all you do and your organization does. And thanks for joining us today on Feldes and Kale. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I joined the conversation, and y'all have a good day.
Take care, Matt.
You as well.
You too.
Bye-bye. Matt DiLoretto, he is the Vice President, State Government Affairs of the Healthcare Distribution Alliance. And Dan Feldes, it's amazing to me how rapidly this all happened, really. The distribution of the vaccine, getting the vaccine, truly it did. I don't think anybody a year ago today would have thought that this would have been possible.
I think that's a fair summary, Ken. I mean, the Healthcare Distribution Alliance, the states, the federal government, you know, everybody working together, public-private partnerships. It was quite the undertaking and continues to be quite the undertaking. And for anyone out there listening, please, please get vaccinated. Get vaccinated. We need you to. That's ramping up, continue to ramp up. And, you know, right now, I think if you sign up on the website, you can get vaccinated pretty quickly.
Yeah. And I think the negative effects of the vaccine have been, you know, you hear about it when it happens, but I think percentage-wise, it's been so minuscule.
Yeah.
And you don't even know sometimes if it's really, you know, vaccine-related. I mean, you know, these people might have had, you know, other conditions that led to what might have happened to them with, you know, I think specifically the Johnson & Johnson vaccine has taken the most heat because of some of the things that happened. But percentage-wise, you know, I would certainly concur with that. And it opens everything up. I mean, we're opening up restaurants now almost to full capacity. We've seen games. I saw games this past weekend on TV from Texas,
yep.
The Red Sox and the Rangers. Full capacity. And I didn't see a whole lot of mask wearing either. Full capacity in that new stadium down in Dallas, Texas. So
I didn't catch that one, but
yeah.
That's wild.
Full capacity. Over 50,
not sure that's a great idea.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see if there's any ramifications. But so far, anyway, and they've been doing this since the start of the season, full capacity in that new ballpark in Texas, 51,000 people at the Kentucky Derby. Now that is about 40% of what they could have.
Right.
But still, 51,000 people at a gathering is pretty good for this stage of the game.
And Medina Spirit won.
You know, yeah, I think a lot of people bet on that thinking like Moderna, right?
Well, Pfizer didn't have a horse in the race. So.
No, that's true. That's true. Just and, we had Lynn Sneerson on talking about it last week. And, I participated. I played a few trifectas and actually hit on the 7, 8, 9 trifecta.
Oh, yeah?
8 was good. The horse that won, but 8, 9, 7 was the order of finish. And, you know, he boxed the trifecta and get the 7, 8, 9. So I did okay. I had never.
Yeah.
I tell you what, Dan, I've bet horse races for a long time, not on a regular basis, but, the Triple Crown races. I used to go to Rockingham Park in Salem when that existed many years ago, and Saratoga, other places. But, you know, not on a, I don't do it every day. I don't do it every month. But I have never, never hit a trifecta before.
Oh, wow.
So, and this was the first time. So I thank Lynn a little bit.
Things are looking up.
Things are looking up. They are. They are. So, but it was a great race. And Bob Baffert, his sixth Kentucky Derby winner, what a trainer he is. He only had one horse in the race. And yep. It was the winner.
And that was the winner. Yeah. Soup and Sandwich was in second for about half of the race.
I was thinking about you, yeah.
And then I think had like an injury or something. So
I had Soup and Sandwich in one of my trifectas.
Yeah.
But obviously did not pay off.
I'm going to have Soup and Sandwich in about 20 minutes.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. And it unfortunately did have – it was in second place for a while, and I was thinking about you, Dan, because that's the horse that you picked up. Feldis and Kale right here on 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. You go on NHTalkRadio.com, find past Feldis and Kale shows that you might have missed. You know, if you're not there at 11 o'clock Monday through Friday, 11 a.m., don't worry. You can find the other shows that you missed on nhtalkradio.com.
Just go online.
And some of the great shows as well with Paul Hodes, former congressman, and Dan Robeson, and all kinds of people. A.J. Kierstead is doing a show now on a weekly basis.
Oh, he is.
Everybody's in the act now, Dan.
Yeah, and it's everybody's getting in on it. I mean, we popularize this whole thing.
No doubt about it.
I mean, that's what everybody says. I mean, and you know, you see it on CNN, MSNBC, Fox News.
Yeah,
everybody's talking about this particular segment.
Oh yeah, no doubt about that. We don't want to keep it under wraps for sure. I tell you what, and it's also WKXL. Well, extolling their virtues is also the home of Boston Celtics basketball. And I tell you what, Dan, I'm kind of worried about the Celtics.
Well, we should be.
I really am. I was very, very frustrated watching that game the other night against Portland, where the game was tied 71-71 at the half. And it was the first time in over 25 years that the Celtics and their opponent had scored 70 or more points in the first half. Yeah, it was a high-scoring first half. Jason Tatum had 26 points in the first half, but was very silent in the second half.
It was odd, especially given, you know, that other game. He popped off for 60 points.
Yes, he did.
Brought him back to win. So I don't know what to make of the Celtics, Ken. I really don't. I have three star players. They all three of them seem to, you know, have random nights of they're completely inconsistent, and I don't know if that's coaching or I don't know if it's player mentality. I don't know what it is, but it just something is just off. I mean, they'll be in the playoffs, right? But I don't see them going very deep in the playoffs.
Unfortunately, I feel the same way, and it shouldn't be. I think the Celtics should be, with their personnel, among the top teams.
Yeah,
in the NBA.
Yep.
And now they find themselves in seventh place in the division with a record just 3 games over .500. I mean, right now, as we talk, they're 34-31. Their next game is Wednesday night against Orlando on the road. But it concerns me. I mean, what really stood out to me the other night was you talked about the 60-point game and the amazing comeback the Celtics had on the Friday night game.
Yeah, yeah.
Where Jason Tatum tied Larry Bird's all-time individual game record for the Celtics at 60 points. Although I'm sure Larry Bird reminded him that he had an overtime to get 60, and Bird did not in the game where he got 60. But what bothered me on Sunday, coming down the stretch in a close game against Portland, is that Marcus Smart was getting more shots in crunch time than Jaylen Brown and or Jason Tatum.
That doesn't make any sense. Marcus Smart, I know some people are rave about Marcus Smart, but he's not an offensive player. I mean, give it to your main guys. Give it to Tatum. Give it to Brown. Give it to whomever. Don't give it to Marcus Smart.
But he was taking more of the big shots down the stretch Sunday night, and that, to me, is a real concern. Evan Fournier had a great game on Sunday.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, the majority of the shots in crunch time, when it really mattered, went to Marcus Smart.
Marcus Smart is good at defense, and he's not very good at offense. I mean, that's my opinion. And did you get the sense that they were designing plays for Marcus Smart?
I don't know.
Or was he just taking the shots?
I just think he was taking random threes, and you know, they were.
It didn't look like it was
clanking
designed.
Clanking off the rim. I mean, yeah, he's going to hit like
someone barely hit the rim.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly right. But down the stretch, you want to give the ball and make sure the shots go to the guys who make them a higher percentage of the time. It only makes sense.
It's logic.
Yeah, and they have got to. I mean, so many times they settle for the threes. They've got to take it to the hoop more often.
Look at guys who can take it to the hoop.
And they do. They do. You know, and really, in the overall scheme of things, Marcus Smart is a lot better taking it to the hoop than he is taking three-pointers.
That's true. And when you take it to the hoop, sometimes things open up around the court, and you can get an open three-pointer. If you want to take a three-pointer, you might as well try to get an open three-pointer rather than forcing one up. But anyways, I don't overall, I don't really understand what is going on with them. It's not clicking.
So inconsistent. They're so inconsistent. And, you know, I don't know whether it goes back to coaching, the fact that they – really, I mean, you could count on at least the fingers of two hands how many times the three top stars, as you mentioned, Tatum, Brown, and Walker, have been in the lineup at the same time. There have just been so many injuries, illnesses, you name it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly factored in, no doubt. But look, they're professional athletes. They're in the NBA.
Yep.
They ought to be consistent. They ought to be consistent coaching too. And as you said, Ken, down the stretch in particular, get the ball to someone who hits a high percentage of the shots, who's your star player, whether it's Walker or Brown or Tatum, you know.
Yep.
Get in their hands, not Marcus Smart.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Peyton Pritchard, the rookie, and Aaron Nesmith has played well lately. They're number one draft pick. So,
yeah.
I mean, they've got probably 10 guys on that roster that are better outside shooters than Marcus Smart. Really.
Yeah. Ken, you or I might be a better outside shooter than Marcus Smart.
Listen, I don't know about you, but, you know.
Ken, you got a good jumper.
At least I used to. In fact, I was taking jumpers this past weekend at the Basketball Hall of Fame. In Springfield,
really?
Massachusetts.
No kidding.
I was out there this weekend, and I hadn't been there in a long time. I wanted to go back and see what it was like. And they have good social distancing policies in effect, and they make sure you know, everybody's healthy. And but it's a great take. I mean, if you've never seen it and if you enjoy basketball, it is great. The history there is just terrific. But I have to tell you, what I like the most is the end of it, where you can actually get on a court. It's a circular type of a facility, circular court, where you can actually shoot at all different varieties of backboards and baskets, even a peach basket. They've got peach baskets up there at the Hall of Fame that you can shoot at. And they've got places where, like, kids can dunk. And, you know, it's just a lot of fun. It really is. It's not that – it's a couple hours away in Springfield, Mass. And a great facility and –
So you drain a few?
I did. So, I mean, you know, it was
Marcus
Smart
taking lessons from you.
great place to visit, though, really is. A great family experience, and it's not that far away. And if you really want to make a weekend of it in Springfield, you can go to the Basketball Hall of Fame, and then you go to Six Flags, which is out there as well. So it's a... You know, a lot of people don't think of Springfield when they think of, you know, taking a little day trip or a weekend trip, but it's not a bad place.
Not a bad place.
I won't mention there's an MGM casino out there, too, but that's beside the point. But it's a fun place. And not only that, but the Dr. Seuss Museum.
Oh, there you go.
The Dr. Seuss Museum is out there as well. There's some great statues. You don't even have to go inside. Some great statues outside the museum. Of the Cat in the Hat and all the famous Dr. Seuss characters over the years. And
you're selling this, Ken. I mean, we don't want to encourage people to spend their tax dollars in Massachusetts. So, I mean.
Well, no, but.
Occasionally, if you need to get spend them elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, but it is a fun place, and it's not far. That's right. You know, it's a couple two and a half hours away. So
yeah, not too bad.
It's not too bad at all. It is Feldis and Kale. We're not too bad at all. We're on every morning at 11:05 on 103.9, 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmer. Heading down the home stretch, it's Feldis and Kale at 103.9, 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Amy Hall will be joining us coming up on our next edition of Feldis and Kale. And we hope you will be too. Today, by the way, is International Firefighters Day. And we should certainly salute them. They have been, you know, on the front lines as well, and always on the front lines, really, no matter what the situation is. And we have had an outbreak of fires, in particular apartment fires in Concord recently.
Yeah. I don't know what explains that. I mean, we could have the fire chief on maybe in the future. But, you know, look, as you mentioned, Ken, our firefighters on the front lines of this crisis, front lines every day, do tremendous work. And salute all of them and their families for their sacrifice and their public service.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is international. No, I should not international. It's National Orange Juice Day. National Orange Juice Day.
Love some orange juice.
You know, I like to mix orange juice. I don't drink it straight very often. No, yeah, I'm not talking about that. No, I'm not talking about occasionally that too. But I like to mix it. Try this if you haven't.
Okay.
And I call it. I call this concoction the Stan Spiro, the longtime head basketball coach at Southern New Hampshire University.
Yep, yep.
I call it Stan because I had breakfast with Stan one morning, and Blake's in Manchester at the time, and Stan said he wanted orange juice mixed with cranberry juice.
Huh.
And I had never done that before, and so I ultimately tried it. And it's great. So if you go to a hotel, you know, and they have the cereals and the juices and all that stuff out there, I always, if I can, mix orange juice and cranberry juice.
I've not tried that. I look forward to trying it.
I think it might be
tasty.
So remember Stan Spiro.
I will.
When you do that. I always call it the Stan Spiro. It is also National Teachers Day. And they, in many cases, have, you know, certainly been impacted by
Absolutely.
The coronavirus in many, many ways, many teaching remotely, some in the classroom. I know my daughter's been out. She's a teacher in Massachusetts, and she's been out, you know, almost over a year now when it's all said and done, and finally goes back next week for the last 6 weeks or so of school.
Yeah, well, you know, you said it, Ken. Look, last spring, teachers basically dropped everything. And they, you know, did remote. They dealt with it. They looked out for their students. They adapted. I was talking about adaptation earlier with Matt DiLorenzo, the Healthcare Distribution Alliance, in terms of the COVID vaccine supply chain. Teachers adapted throughout all of this. And, you know, public service takes many different forms, but teachers got to be amongst the highest in terms of public service. And in the words of late Kristen McAuliffe, teachers touch the future. They teach. So thankfully for all of them and for all that they have done here in New Hampshire, really under tough conditions and quite frankly not a ton of support from the state, but they've done yeoman's work. And I know our families, our kids, our communities, our local businesses all are grateful for everything they've done.
No doubt about that. That is for sure. And I would be remiss if I didn't say that this is Star Wars Day, Dan Feldis.
Oh, all right. There you go.
May the 4th be with you. May the 4th be with you. Get it?
I get it. Yes. May the 4th be with you. That's wonderful.
That's
I'm going to go home and watch all of them.
All of them. Are you a Star Wars guy?
Well, I mean, it's hard to. I've watched all of them.
Yeah.
I haven't, watched them repeatedly.
Like you don't have any action figures or anything like that.
My home is chock full of action figures, and you know, and on the weekends I dress up as Yoda. I'm kidding. Of course, not really. No, just kidding. But anyways, no, I do like Star Wars. I would not put myself into a Star Wars adamant fan.
Right.
But I do like them.
Good.
How about you?
I do. Like you, I've seen them all, but I'm not going to watch them all today. Let's put it that way. Not all at once. In small doses, maybe.
Right.
Well, Dan Feldes, that wraps up another edition of Feldes and Kale, and we are presented on 103.9 1450 WKXL by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers.